Welcome, dear listeners and fellow K-drama lovers, to your favorite critical K-drama podcast, the K-drama Feuilleton Podcast, with me, Maksu, and my lovely co-host, Sally. In today's episode, we are talking with our guest, Snigdha, on Quinong / Quichuan women who return to the countryside in search for a new life away from the city. The second part of our talk focuses on another large group of young women in the countryside, namely marriage migrant women, who are quite underrepresented in Korean media. While we mostly discuss the movie Little Forest and the drama Gombaeryeong or Heaven's Garden, many other recent dramas are mentioned and connections to former episodes made. Enjoy, everyone! Hello and welcome to our episode on Quinong, Quichuan, and migrant women with our guest Snigdha.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
Oh, we're very happy that you're here to enlighten us on your very cool research that you're doing. So we're very, very happy and feel very honored that you could make the time to come on our humble little critical K-drama podcast.
even with the pain from wisdom tooth and
all that. I came here to just kind of talk about dramas and kind of forget about teeth pain for a while.
Yes. Drama is the best antidote, I feel. Do you have a cat?
Yes,
just heard the cat.
I have two cats, and they decided to only start meowing when you start the record button.
I love it. Oh, I love cats. What are their names?
So my firstborn is Morty. Morty is a cat I got from Daejeon when I lived in Daejeon, and he was just on the street. They're both like just street cats, like Korean shorthairs. And the second one is Jumbles. It's just a name I did not think would last long, but that's just his name now.
I love it.
Jumbles is a cat that just came in through the window, so I didn't really plan on having
it. Really? That's so cool. I wish a cat would come through my window. I've been waiting too long, like nothing happened. Maybe a pigeon in my cat could happen. But
well, you never know.
I keep my windows open.
Your heart's and your windows open.
I once took care of Morty, but then when I visited you another time, you suddenly had a second cat. And
I did not suddenly have a second cat. I definitely told Morty I got a second cat, but he just totally blacked down. I think because the first time was so traumatic for him when he realized his cat allergies after taking care of Morty for a few days.
Oh, no. Oh my, how did that manifest? Was it like very bad allergy, or was it just a bit of a cough?
It was a bit of like coughing and some skin reaction.
He was dying.
You arrived and Max was like, "Here's your cat."
Yeah.
I think that could be a drama plot.
It's just like, I mean, how did I not think that this is going to happen?
Okay, well, you knew that I had a lot of allergies.
Already, yeah.
This was just...
just another one.
This is like forced coming out of allergies. Like, if I did that, I'm really sorry. Maybe you didn't want anyone to know.
No, it's okay. Well, we should just introduce you a bit more. We met actually in Seoul when we studied together. And Korean
What did you study?
Studies.
Oh, Korean studies. Sorry.
Yeah,
We did have several courses together. We were in the same year, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tonggap. Tongmun. Are we Tonggap? No. Just Tong.
We're not Tonggap.
What is Tonggap? I'm only learning Korean right now, so I'm
Tonggap is like same age.
But we are in the same year, so like Donggi.
Yeah,
like,
Donggi. Yeah, so we just, we, I think we met in 2017.
Yes.
Wow. In 2017. Oh, it's been a while, like now.
5 years, man.
Think about it. Wow. Oh, I feel old. 2017, we both studied, so international studies. I mean, I don't know, like, what exactly your major was, but mine was, like, international
studies. Yeah, yeah. It is an international studies, on, but it was
Korean studies. And Max was, like, you know, he was like a double kind of for the smart kids. You know, you go to two.
Not really.
I mean,
I mean, you were the government scholarships. Like,
yeah, there's like 500 of those people. Okay.
Anyways.
Yeah, so we met that time. We had a lot of courses together. I think we were interested in a lot of similar, like, topics at the time, and Max graduated earlier than me, and I graduated later because I also did like extra semesters and stuff.
Do you remember like the first interaction between each other? What you talked about?
Actually,
I think it was in the sociology class, maybe, or the North Korea class. I'm not sure, but yeah
we had another French friend, and
yes, I know.
So we used to hang out together in the beginning. So sociology, we had a sociology class that was particularly hard because, at least, I mean, for me, I don't know about other people. It was for a beginner, like if it's your first class in master's class in Korea, it's like completely in Korean and all the readings are in Korean and your professor's super strict.
Oh, God.
Professor's strict and weird also. But
that sounds intense. Wow.
Yeah.
I think it's just still like so mind-baffling to me that you just like did a whole kind of master's in Korea, like that, which is probably your like third language or like something like that. I mean, I did a master's in English, which was my second language, like, and learning Arabic, but for me that would be as if I would have gone to, I don't know, like Amman and did my master's in Arabic, and I tell you, I would not have been able to do that. So, kudos to you.
We didn't expect that.
We didn't expect that. Like, I mean, you know, like, funny you say that, because maybe if you go to Oman and then, like, you know, if everything just falls on you, like, all at once and you just have to deal with it, it was kind of like that, not out of choice.
Oh, like, I see.
Definitely, we went for a master's that's going to be in Korean, most of it, but you never think that that's going to be like immediately, like you're going to be expected to know so many things, you know. So a lot of
actually, I think we connected because we were the other English speakers kind of in this class,
exactly.
and the minor kind of, no, that just sounds a bit strange, but like there were some other nationalities.
No, minorities. And it's very difficult.
I know.
Class. There's like one person. There's like one German person, one American person.
One German person, one yes.
Indian person. There's like one from each like Asian country. I think it was that
it was
English speakers. It's true. Like people who like we were definitely in minority. English, like
in that
as
sense.
One
of
your languages speakers.
Because others were mostly Asian language speakers. Yeah.
East Asian, mostly, right? Or Southeast Asian,
Yeah.
So you were a linguistic minority?
In a sense.
it's not even really. Most of our first language.
Right, exactly.
French person with second language English, German person with second, Indian person with like English.
Okay, so you were a second linguistic, second language linguistic minority.
We weren't a minority, I think. Like the framing has been wrong.
I know.
I really tried to make it work for you.
Well, let's
thank you.
Get into our topic, maybe, because we always tend to like spend too much time on other.
All right.
but I think that's like different kind of stuff. So Max is really good at like keeping us to the like the agenda, but I also really enjoy like, you know, like very long going down private. A rabbit hole and like about this. But I think that's also just because I like listening to podcasts where it's a bit like, oh yeah, and then this happened, and then oh yeah, and then this, and you're like, oh yeah, I like that.
yeah. No, well, we should maybe finish our introduction and why you chose this research topic we talk about today.
Max would probably like know, but I did my thesis research actually on rural women's agricultural movements in Asia. So my two main countries that I kind of compared, but also kind of like looked at, were India and Korea. And we, especially on focusing on like the seed saving movement that was taking place, a contemporary movement. I mean, it's not a historical paper, it was like a sociological paper. And so I was very interested in rural Korean issues because like a lot of academic research, especially with Korean studies and generally like these days, is focused on urban areas or urban issues. And it's especially interesting for me, coming from a developing country that is largely an agricultural one, to see how and what happens to agriculture when, you know, modernization of what is considered development happens. And Korea is a great example because it was a, you know, rice growing agricultural country. Most people were economically, they were
employed involved, in the agricultural sector.
In the agricultural sector. So especially among that, like what happens to women when that happens? So because, you know, you have to have a very specific focus in my thesis. In the beginning, actually, I wanted to look in a more, you know, kind of broad way, but professors just like, you're never finishing your master's degree. You're never finishing your degree. You got to save something for your PhD. So I kind of like narrowed it down to that. And so my chapter that we're kind of going to be talking about today is also related to rural women's lives in Korea. So it's not India this time. And I wanted to, so basically I saw like that they were looking for gender and sexuality in the Hallyu wave right now, and like how it's being depicted, and mostly in the dramas we watch, I mean, are, you know, urban based, right? Like most dramas, and there has been recently, like at least with variety shows and like a subgenre of dramas, where you see a lot of like these urban like dwelling people kind of going back to the countryside. And, you know, like you have these healing shows, like, you know, healing in Konglish. And and so I found that really interesting because like I've been watching Korean dramas for a long time, and during like the last 2 years, I mean, we were talking about this earlier, but the last 2 years I haven't been really, you know, field work has been difficult for academics generally. So like while my field is not film studies at all, or representational studies, I mean, I did study English as well, like you. I studied literature for my bachelor's. And so while I am used to doing like textual analysis, I thought like, you know, like if I cannot do any sociological or like field work based studies, how about I, you know, entertain this question of, you know, rural migration and kind of this kind of, you know, rural based TV shows and countryside TV shows, and kind of look at what's happening in the countryside right now through those, you know. And that's roughly.
And a really fascinating paper came out.
Very confused paper came out, I would say.
It tries to like engage with so many topics, and like from sociological perspective and from film studies perspective, it's like fascinating how you connect all of these dots.
I mean, I think what you're trying to say is you gotta choose what you want to say, Smith.
No. But yeah, when you introduced the paper, it sounded at first it was only on migrant women, but actually you're dealing with another topic, which is Quinong women. So like two groups of women going back to the countryside, or going to the countryside. Yes.
Yeah, like at that time when I talked to you, I was just like, I suppose we were like just talking about it, and I was just talking about like a particular aspect because there's just so much to talk about mm-hmm. in that chapter that I didn't actually like introduce that bit. But yeah, definitely trying to build like, so we haven't even named, like we haven't even given the name of, so the listener might be a bit confused because they don't even know the name right now.
Oh, yes, I should give the name maybe. So the title of the paper is The New Country Women, mm-hmm. Exploring Popular Representations of Korean Kwichon and Traditional Women's Marriage Migration. So like these two groups actually mm-hmm. to the Korean countryside.
So, what is Kwichon?
Yeah, so Kwichon? I think that's, let's just kind of, if you want to explain that. Because it's like an important, like if you're going to be talking about this subject, I suppose.
Yes.
Kwichon, technically the word Kwi Hanja is just to return, which is to return back to the countryside. Chon means the country or the rural area, you know, or the village, literally the village. But it comes to represent like the countryside generally. So it's just to return to the countryside, literally. However, Kwichon is not actually used as a term for people who are, you know, from the countryside, because the people who are returning to the countryside have actually never lived in the countryside in their own lifetime.
That's what I found very interesting when you were mentioning it, actually, yes. Because they talk about a return, but there's actually no real return in it.
So it's like an imagined return.
Yeah.
Precisely. So,
and then there's another term also commonly used called Kwinong, and I think you mentioned it also.
It's very, very related term, right? Because it's gui as in return. Nong means agriculture, so or just the act of growing rice, or like So that's nong. So gui nong is just going back to agriculture. So basically, a lot of people do gwichon and also do gwinon along with it, because you cannot sustain yourself in the countryside without working. So, however, there are people who will go after retirement, say, and just, and you kind of have the economic resources to, help you live there, then it's fine. But it's mostly younger people have quite a hard time doing that. So a lot of people turn to agriculture.
And is there like a kind of, I mean, in terms of policy, like what the politics of the country want, is that also something that is kind of supported, like we are too kind, because for example in England one of the huge problems is that London is just this massive metropolis that kind of sucks all the economic the labor force and everything out of the rest of the country. I mean, particularly the north or Cornwall, I mean, they're all like super marginalized areas. And there's like a lot of policies trying to, I mean, now like part of Boris Johnson's thing is kind of leveling up like the north, or like all these kind of rural areas. So I was wondering whether in Korea that's also,
that's a very interesting point. Like you talked about the north, but like I actually think about this a lot. Like in Europe, there has obviously been a large depopulation of the countryside generally, especially in like UK. I mean, I suppose there are countries that are still people, like you said, you grew up
in Germany,
village, right?
Yes.
Like I guess mainland Europe is different, but with UK especially, there's very large depopulation, and there's also like, I mean, apart from the north, and there's a difference between small town and real countryside. In terms of real countryside, I feel like, I mean, I haven't lived in the UK, but I feel like the UK is quite like rich. Like the countryside is pretty rich, because and there's rather less farming. Like, you know, there's not actually a lot of agricultural production going on in the UK countryside. But when it comes to the north, it's mostly smaller cities and smaller towns. And because there's a large discrepancy in terms of employment and economic opportunities in the north in comparison to London, which is actually very similar to Korea, because there's a large discrepancy in terms of economic opportunities in even, say, Busan, which is the second largest metropolitan city after Seoul. So that it was very interesting. But I wonder if the countryside needs that kind of help from Boris. Apart from the, because, I mean, look at, like, I mean, I just watched Bridgerton, man. Like, I mean, I just binged that last night. I mean, obviously, that's not contemporary, but.
I love that. I love that comparison. That's really good.
Sorry, I'm just going to get the light on. I'm just sitting in the dark.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay.
Well, for Korea, I think there has been some policies. Have been some policies. For example, Sejong, like this new metropolitan, like this new capital area, or like, some businesses moving to Jeju-do, for example, also. I mean, there were some government supports for these kind of moves. It started already like 20 years ago.
Yeah, like that does definitely exist. Like, to answer your question, like originally, in terms of policies, yes, there's government is definitely like, and I talk about in my chapter in various different ways, because there was like a large, there's been a big fear, and it's very understandable that villages are basically going to completely disappear. And there are lots of villages that have completely already disappeared because there has been a large exodus of people during 1960s and 70s from the countryside to, you know, urban areas for work. And because, you know, industrialization had begun and you know, just, and rice was being imported, like, you know, America was sending rice, and so the actual need for farming, so the rice prices have like bottomed out. It's not in profitable activity at all. So what happens is that not only young men but also young women en masse leave the countryside, which is kind of what happens. So there's like a simultaneous depopulation, but also a feminization, like older women kind of take over the countryside, which is kind of what I talk about in my thesis more. But because so your Pyongyang, your like average age becomes 60 plus in the countryside. There's
definitely
a lot of
if you even just visiting the countryside, you see that the streets are.
And do they all wear these flowery pants? These flowery pants and these funny hats.
Yep. So during my thesis, it was actually really nice, and that's one of the big like times I kind of got my idea of writing this chapter about the kind of women you meet in the countryside right now. Because when I went to the countryside for my interview research, so I went to like Taengsong in the north and Gocheong in the south, and both places, like, I met like older women mostly to talk about how they're saving seeds and why they're doing it, etc. But I also found out the other big group at those centers, like, you know, it's Yeosong Nongminhwe. So it's like women, you know, like women farming women centered. So the other big group is actually younger Korean women. And I asked them, like, were you born here? Like, you know, like, did you live here all your life? Like, what is it? So a lot of people like came from the city. Like, they were like, you know, they had younger kids and they had came from the city with their husbands to move here. I mean, they may or may not have some kind of connection to the place. I mean, their grandparents maybe have, you know, could have been from it, or they're like somebody they knew in the city, or some family had moved in there before. And the other group that actually did not have a lot of representation in the center were the marriage migrant women, which is something I was really interested by, because when I came there, like, I actually get a lot of stares in Seoul. Like, I get a lot of, I mean, if you've been to Seoul, you'd know, right? Like, you know, you kind of have to ignore it, and then it's fine. I mean, you know, you're different. So, but in the countryside, if you're an Asian woman, you're probably going to get less stares, because it's very common to see somebody from Southeast Asia. And while I'm not from Southeast Asia, I mean, you know, there's like you never know. So yeah, that was something really funny for me. So when I was talking to them, they were actually very open with me. They could talk to me. Oh. I was just like, okay, so like, you know, like I see that in the photos as well, because you love like, so a lot of these places have like, you know, photos, and you have kids center. You usually have like a child care center at the Yosong Nongmin here, because when these women go farming, you know, where they keep their kids. So
yeah.
So you see, like, the kids, like, there are a lot of mixed kids. So, like, I asked them, like, you know, so what's, like, you know, you have a lot of foreign women also coming here, or men, like, you know. So they were like, yes, there's a lot of foreign labor, but there's also the largest influx of women are, as I heard, was, you know, Southeast Asian, Filipinian, yeah, Chinese women. And there were a lot of, there's been a lot of, like, not conflict, but definitely misunderstandings and, you know, language related problems that I heard about, you know, when they come to the center and we can't really explain to them, because I only heard it from the Korean perspective, really.
Right.
And, that we can't really understand them. And they were very understanding as well. Some people were more, some less, you know, of the kind of problems these women would also have in understanding them, you know.
Yeah.
So,
and how come that, like, I didn't know that there was even like a big or like a substantial kind of marriage migration going on from women into Korea. Is that because men in the Korean countryside are having trouble finding women to marry, or like I'm just wondering what the
that's exactly the explanation.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, as we just discussed, like, younger women don't live in the country, they just kind of leave for Seoul for their education and, you know, better prospects in life. So like what happens is a lot of men get left behind because they till the land, right? So a lot of these men are older and they're looking for a wife, and, you know, like marriage market is a
also one place. I think additional aspect was that there were in the 90s many, or like even before that, some abortions for female fetus, I think, right? I mean, that is also kind of in the explanation of why there are not enough women in Korea in general. Like there were some years of that was always
I mean, in my thesis or in my paper, I did not argue that way, but that's definitely one of the reasons one can like think of.
I was recently reminded of this because someone asked me how, like, how is a female child still seen in Korean society? And now it changed, but at that time, I think it was really.
Definitely reason. And honestly, one of the, that is a reason, but even if there were like one-to-one women, like for men, like not a lot of women like chose, like that's just statistics, not a lot of women choose to live there and choose for life, like, and that's fair enough, and women have been doing that for centuries, you know, like taking care, so they want career opportunities, etc.
Right.
You know, so women moved forward to the city, and so these men kind of, you know, there's a lot of broker services that have come up in last 20 years 20 30 years of like matching matchmaking services with Southeast Asian countries, and kind of, so there's a huge age discrepancy. It's usually poorer younger women who are looking for a better life in Korea, and they come here. So for them, the idea of a better life, even if it's a countryside, is fine. Yeah. However, for Korean women, that is not the idea. So, you know, the idea of what stability is very different, which is why I talk about cyclical trajectory. So like, you know, so one kind of, for what, so, you know, so when we talk about Gichon and Ginong as well, when Korean women or younger Korean women actually do decide to come back, they are not actually involved as much. They don't come due to marriage, you know, they don't come
to
the place of a housewife, they don't come for those duties, they come there because their lives
as independent women, as you I think term it also in the paper.
They come I mean there's two different, like, we can talk about there are many
reasons. The representation, I mean, that is how it's represented.
So there are many reasons why they come, and we can't pinpoint it, we can only study and just, like, you know, kind of
observe.
observe it kind of, but you see that a lot of them are not taking up those kinds of like farming related jobs. A lot of people run cafes, some people run agriculture experience centers, like, you know, some people run B&Bs. So
I saw that a lot in Chitodo, I think, but I mean also probably in other regions, these cafes in the middle of nowhere. Very common for Jeju too, but
Jeju is a particularly extreme case.
Popular.
Real popular destination for Korean people to return to. I mean, you're not actually from there, but you return to Jeju.
They want to live there, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I kind of use some dramas and film to discuss like the representation of these women, this new entrants in the countryside, you know, finally after
these new independent women kind of going back.
Calling them independent is the representation in the films or dramas.
Depends. I mean, then, well, that what they are, I cannot say. I mean, they are choosing to go back sometimes. You know, there's, you know, less cases of single women going back. Usually it's families. They go with their husbands. So it, why I chose to only look at young women, however, is because there was a great lack of young women until the 2000s, you know, like there was only going, there was not coming back. So for the first time a group that came back, you know, for women, it's interesting for me to look at that.
I was wondering also, like, in terms of, because we've been talking about feminism earlier, that this kind of great exodus of young women into the city, might that also be because of like very kind of patriarchal norms that kind of rule agricultural countryside life? So like, as a, or is it truly more about, I don't know, like career, like I just want to have a different career. I want to go to the city. Or has it to do with, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm just asking. In terms of like, like what does, what would the life of a woman who doesn't go to the city look like if she would get married, let's say, to a local man and a farmer? Like, would that be kind of more the kind of traditional housewife, house duties plus rearing children and extra work? Or would it be more egalitarian, or is it like just not appropriate to talk in these kind of patterns at all?
I mean, no, of course. I mean, it's a fine question. I would say at that time, I can't really pinpoint what exactly an aspiration to go to Seoul would be like. For most women, it was money at that time. It was a time of great poverty, as we know, and everyone had to work, like all hands on deck. And women, especially younger girls, became the backbone of, you know, Korean economy around this time, because a lot of factories employed younger women. And these, where were these people coming from? They were coming mostly from Seoul, if sort of outside Seoul, right? So at that time, I don't really think, I think if they could, they'd like to, like, I mean, I don't know, but if money was available where you are, and jobs were available, and if you can dream to have a better life where you are at, I'm not sure if people would choose to move. But that was definitely the bigger reason, I would say, is an economic one when they chose to leave.
I don't think also it differs much if you, like, in the city they are exploited in another way, and there's still patriarchic structures there. So then they would get married and maybe had to give up their job and get.
I mean, if you read like Shin Kyung-suk and like these kind of like,
I thought of her, or like these movies actually that portray factory workers. I mean, you're probably a better.
I was just saying, there's a lot of nostalgia towards the countryside. Like, it wasn't like such a place, it wasn't because they hated it. It was mostly, you have to work, you have six siblings back home, and they're only hiring young girls in factories this time because they can pay them less, you know, there's a lot of reasons. So they become like the head of the family at a very young age. And so that was basically why that happened at that time.
Was that in the 90s?
Sorry.
No, it was probably in the 60s.
60s, 70s.
Okay. 90s is Korea is already kind of like, not that it's very equal in terms of pay and a lot of that, but it's definitely getting neoliberalized. It's at the height before 97 and the IMF crisis happens. It's at its height of, you know.
I think marriage migration, though, started maybe in around the late 90s. Yeah, that is maybe why. Right. So I think more the internationalization of Korea would be starting after the economic crisis, or like 97 after that, kind of more migrant workers, but also migrant marriage happens. And
jobs get like, you know, like menial labor, farm labor. There's not enough people to do that kind of stuff. So you get a lot of, you know, people from Nepal, Bangladesh, you get people from Sri Lanka working and you know, in farms, and because for better opportunities. And in terms of women, you get a lot of Southeast Asian. In the beginning, it was mostly Chinese and Korean Chinese women, and then Japanese women, some Japanese women, and then Filipino, and then went to Vietnam, Southeast Asia. I mean, that was kind of, obviously, because of the Vietnam War also, there was a lot of, what's it called, like, cure you.
Sorry. Exchange. Well, that sounds a bit positive.
I mean, if you want to look at that.
Yeah, but there are many, true. Yeah, we should do another episode on Vietnam-Korea relations. It's a very big topic. And they are,
so
amongst,
so
like students and population, and also migrant population, quite a big group,
which is interesting, because you guys talk about dramas, right? Like, but there are hardly any dramas with like Vietnamese characters, although there has been a lot of exchange, and there has been like Korea participated in the Vietnam War. I mean, historically, and even right now, it's one of the largest groups of foreigners in the country, and that kind
really?
Of
brings,
yeah,
I didn't know.
After Chinese people, like I think after Chinese,
yes, I think
Vietnamese
so. Yeah.
People are a large group.
Chinese, Korean, but then also
yeah.
I mean, maybe we should go to the dramas here, because there is also a Chinese pretending to be Chinese. it's kind of funny.
Anyways, did you guys, how did you like it? I mean, so basically, I looked at what's it called? So Heaven's Garden. And we looked at, in terms of, I mean, if you guys want to talk about marriage migrants first, we can do that, or we can talk about the green.
I just thought, because we were at that topic, but like, we can also start with the other one. Yeah,
I mean,
because your paper is more structured on this is the one group that is represented, and this is the group that is not represented.
Unfortunately,
so maybe,
there hasn't been a lot of dramas where both groups are represented together, except for one that I talk about. Which is Heaven's Garden, where both...
Yes, both. I watched a few episodes only, but it was hard to watch, I have to admit. Like, it's kind of a bit like...
I actually really enjoy the tacky nature of it. Like, I think I'm a bit weird that way, but it's just...
I was wondering how you could... How could you endure watching like so many episodes of this?
I watched it twice, actually. It's funny. First time I watched it, it wasn't because I wanted to do any research. Like, I legitimately
there was for the research.
And it wasn't for any, like, I just watched it, and I saw these characters, and that kind of got me thinking about this drama. And the second time I watched it was obviously because of my research. But
still, it's like 40 episodes or something.
And... Whoa. From which year is it?
It's 2011. So it's actually not that old, but I think it's funny you call it Chunsurupta, because
what does that mean? Sorry,
techie.
So techie. Sorry,
but it's funny because the Hanja of Chunsurupta is actually
it's. I know. Yes. Maori Chun.
Yeah.
True. It is, but I mean the whole like what you're calling nostalgia. I think it's like. Very strong, strongly visible in this drama.
Strongly visible in that drama. And it's very rare for 2011. I mean, it's already, what, 11 years back now. Mm-hmm. But 10 years back. Yeah. However, even if it's 10 years back, I find it to be quite recent for a countryside drama of that kind of nostalgia to be present, because it was like a huge part of like 90s and 2000s television, that kind of nostalgia towards the countryside. And then that kind of like made way for
even until the 2010s. Yeah, it's quite surprising actually. When we look at other dramas we discussed from the 2010s, it's all like in the city with like the heirs or
It, 2011, if Namcheon is 2011, it's
Gumbae. 2011, we discussed it. 2011, one.
You probably discussed like, say, Boys of Flowers.
Boys of Flowers, 2009, or maybe even before,
and then there is Secret Garden. Like dramas kind of started at that time. And it's funny that this kind of coexisted, and it was one of the last vestiges, I would say, of that, because it's not that the nostalgia died. I wouldn't say the nostalgia died. It was just a different generation and a different kind of nostalgia that began. Because
this reminded me of, I mean, it was probably airing during the weekends, and it's probably family drama genre. So many different age groups and also many older people represented, while in other dramas, it's more like these 20s, 30s age groups.
Here,
I mean, a lot of the plot turns around these elderly, I would say. I mean, the few episodes that I watched.
I think it's getting a bad rep. I think it's pretty good.
Sorry. I like to criticize.
I love that championing.
I mean, there's a lot of problematic things in it, like what we'd consider from our perspective, from 2022 perspective, whatever. But however, there's definitely like this kind of like beauty of Gumbae Ryeong. It's an actual place you can go there. And and it's beautifully like shown, like it's really heavenly. It's like where it is, like a little valley, and it's really pristine and untouched. And that kind of thing kind of gets talked about in the drama, about how forces of like capital, like, you know, you have factories trying to get, like, they're trying to build factories there, but you know, some villagers are for it, and then other villagers are, now we'll fight for our village, you know, we want to
landscape also, the beautiful.
Interesting in a lot of ways, right? Like,
I like that element of kind of resistance against the kind of big capital and like industrialization, globalization, and this kind of we need to kind of save this last paradise vibe. It's a bit like Studio Ghibli theme. versus the kind of dirty industrialized fight.
Where's Mononoke in this drama? I was hoping for some.
all of them. The Ghibli is like all of them, right? So I like that. And then, you know, they were trying to look at a lot of.
But I mean, these houses, no one lives in these Hanok style houses at all, like in the countryside. After Saemaul Undong, this is never like happening. Even in the other film you recommended, Little Forest, she lives in this very beautiful Hanok house. And
it's like a traditional house, right?
It looks like a forest.
Well, like Little Forest, you funny you mention it. Again, it's a nostalgia, like completely, like, you know, dipped in nostalgia and out. Like, it's heavenly. It's beautiful. It's as beautiful as it can get when, you know, really... paradise, really. So I mean, I kind of talked about that, and it doesn't have any representation of marriage market. It's not marriage
women. That one not.
So this is where the kind of difference between, so if we kind of start talking with like Little Forest, you guys must have watched it. So with Little Forest, it's the main character is a 20-somethings you know, woman who has failed her exam, her teacher, you know, so there's like a national teacher's exam. Entrance exam, so she's failed it, and her boyfriend got in and she failed, so she just goes back to her home. And there's so many spoilers in this. I mean,
in this one, it's actually a real return though, because she grew up in this village.
It's a real return. So, however, it's still Gichon, literal Gichon, and she returns and you know, kind of finds herself, finds, you know, rebuilds her relationship with her mother through her recipes, through seasonal food, and, you know,
the mother is not present though, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
It's true. No, my mother's not present, but through her food, her recipe kind of develops, you know, kind of like starts a journey to forgiving her mother, which kind of happens.
Oh, I love that.
It's beautiful.
I read your paper first and then I watched the movie. Oh. So I'm a bit biased with all that.
I'm so sorry.
You were calling it mukbang and then like
mukbang.
and every time she cooks something else, I was reminded of this term and
I'm
thought,
so
oh
sorry.
My god, this is another mukbang.
I mean, it's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. Like, when I first watched it, I was just mesmerized. I mean, honestly, people who criticize it are like me, like, are the kind of people who really actually want to do it. I mean, you know, but because you end up thinking about the practical realities of it and what would it actually happen if you do that. And I would love to live in nature. I mean, you know, that's one of my pipe dreams, whatever. And so in that drama, definitely what happens for Haewon, she finds love, like the main character, I think her name is Haewon. She finds love, she finds, you know, a new occupation that gives her some sense of mobility, a sense of boram, like, you know, like you actually
feeling useful,
you know, useful, and are you just accomplishment, feeling of accomplishment, you know, that it is missing when you study for 4 years and then you still don't pass an exam, you know, that kind of, and you work at a, she worked, like the kind of differences of how the city was represented in the film. I mean, you must, if it was so different, right?
It was so extreme though. I mean, after reading your paper though, but she was in this little room with this, I don't know, studying and at the same time eating. And
she was eating like rotten food from the convenience store that she worked at. Yes. And her, you open your fridge and there's like a rotten, like, onion. And like,
not but mukbang, and he was anti-mukbang.
No mukbang there. And her, like, her boyfriend is a real shitbag in like,
yeah. He doesn't appear that much in the
doesn't appear that much, but clearly, like, you know, the
relationship, when he does,
the relationship isn't great. And so, you know, it's just a,
I don't understand though. I mean, this is such a misrepresentation of Seoul. I mean, there's so many good coffee shops and you can go to good restaurants. You don't have to go to.
It's so funny you say that because I
know.
I read people on, like, you know, people talking from, who are women living in the countryside, who talked about the other end, like the countryside. They're like, this is such a terrible representation of the countryside. It's nothing like it. You think she looks so fucking perfect? Okay. She looks so perfect while she fixes the roof. You know?
Right.
And, you know, the thunderstorm comes and it ruins, like, her boyfriend's entire, like, you know,
garden. She's like, oh my god, I should help you pick up some fruits here. I will make some apple stew now.
Such a disservice to the film. It's a beautiful film. Please watch it. But, like, and then read my paper. Anyway, so for the, like, the character, it's paradise, like, you know, it's achievement of mobility, it's moving ahead, it's a lot of aspirations that young people actually have. That's why the kind of film comes about, because it's something people want to watch, right? I would say, I mean, it's, and it got a great, you know, like,
it was popular. I mean, I talked with another Korean friend about it and she said she didn't understand my criticism at all. Because, I mean, this was your criticism.
I mean, I totally get it. And especially if you're somebody living in the city, you'd be like, no, it's perfect. Like, why are you doing it, right? You know? But a lot of people in the countryside would be like, we don't even have minimum wage right now. And things are pretty bad. And the only representation that the countryside is getting is healing programs. Or on the very other end of the spectrum, it is memories of a murder. And it's...
Yes. You were mentioning that movie. I thought, like, oh, why is this coming up? But then it makes sense that, Yeah.
A murder.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's a movie by Bong Joon-ho.
Anyway, I mean, not to say, obviously a lot of these films used to find their background in the countryside when they talk about really supernatural, like the wailing, for example, or really heinous crimes would be in the countryside. A lot of the times that happened in the thousands that a lot of films find there. So that was the other extreme of looking at countryside as a primitive kind of place, like where crimes may happen and whatever. I mean, and that's not really only my point. Like, there's like other film studies researchers kind of talk about it, and this is the new kind of countryside. This is the healing countryside, you know.
Yeah,
it's the very cryptic, the kind of extreme.
I wonder whether this countryside is particularly produced, probably with an urban audience in mind, because kind of to offer this kind of projection of. Oh, we're in the city, but if we wanted to, we could all go and find this paradise in the countryside. Like, kind of maybe also a bit of a reassurance if I want to, I could also actually return to the countryside. So
I think Snigdha, you actually mentioned this in your paper that there are so many recent dramas where people go to the countryside, and we talked about this.
Some
also
of which you talked about, right? Like you talked about. Okay, it's okay not to be okay.
It's okay not to be okay was our first episode, but we didn't focus that much.
Oh yeah, that was all over the place. That episode.
We talked more about the psychological aspect. But you're right. I mean, they moved to the countryside for job reasons.
Again, in that drama, if you remember, she was a writer. Things weren't going very well for her.
Yes.
She moves back for whatever reason and kind of finds herself again, finds her refooting in writing, gets
connecting
inspired.
With the past, connecting with this boy, and like
that kind of pattern you'll find a lot, like hometown cha cha cha, you find that kind of pattern, like gets fired off her job, goes back, finds love, finds
Kim Sun-ho.
Also, she has a new job there and a new community, and she's kind of integrated into this rural community.
Precisely. Yeah. And there was, what was it? Oh, that was such a, oh my, I can't believe I watched it. The piano. Oh, what was it? Like something like, Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti, something like
Do La Sol Sol Sol. It was
called.
In English, I think.
I can't believe you watched it as well.
I think I haven't watched it, but I seen the kind of trailer, and it was it supposed to be a bit like La La Land. Was that something like that?
I think I think you might have just confused the names because they sound similar.
Oh, maybe. Oh, but go on. Please tell us about that job.
I mean, there's not much to tell. It's pretty similar. Like, she kind of, like, finishes her career in piano in the city. She's a really rich girl whose dad dies and she becomes bankrupt.
Mm.
And then she goes back and her, like, career in piano is over. And she goes back and starts a new piano hagwon.
Okay. Mm.
And finds love, obviously. You have to.
Of course.
Okay, well.
And kind of very similar patterns of these kind of dramas, especially during Corona pandemic.
Yeah, like, interestingly.
A lot of these kind of dramas, like, obviously people feel very stuck. People feel stuck. They want to move. The idea of mobility, like, you know, they want, at least you want to, like, have what we in Korean is called Theri Manjok. Or, you know, like, what would be a good translation for that?
Being instead of another person.
Yeah,
being
so like
happy,
a borrowed satisfaction.
Happiness.
Almost. So it's
like kind of living vicariously.
Exactly, that's the word. Vicarious, like entertainment, or vicariously enjoying that kind of getting satisfied vicariously by looking at people eat. People farm.
I think that is really for the popularity of these shows.
So when you see the representation of young women going back and all this, usually like for the better, like in the sense there's like there's mobility to be found, there is a goal to be found, there's not always marriage, like it's not very like you're not bound down, it's usually somebody very understanding, somebody who you can, like, you know, spend your time with. Even at the end of Little Forest, she doesn't get married or anything like that, she just finds a partner. Similarly with Gumbiryong, which was Heaven's Garden, the main character found, she doesn't say yes to him in marriage, but they're like partners or whatever.
The cafe shop owner.
Yeah, the cafe shop owner. The police officer who also is a Gichonin in the show.
The cafe looks so funny though.
Hey, that was the 2000s. That was cool. You used to go there.
I know. I mean, probably.
Probably have a photo of you sitting in there. These days, cafes are just too cool. Like,
I know. Yes, the old cafes are just very cool.
Are they all like very kind of minimalist? Kind of,
yeah, it's so minimalist. I've like sat on the table many times, not knowing which one.
Oh, yeah, and these very uncomfortable.
I think that's that minimalism at its worst when you're sitting on a tiny little stool and it's super uncomfortable. And it's like awkwardly trying to not look weird.
Yeah, I think these people do not understand the point of a cafe when I see them put like table like.
But have you been to this one Jeju themed cafe in Gangnam, which is very hot these days? That one is kind of going back to this rural and like escape the city life. Like they have all these small halbe figures, what is it called? And then the floor is all covered with.
I think they're called Dol Harubang, right?
Dol Harubang.
The floor is covered in what? In like wood chips or?
Yes, some kind of wood chips. Mm. Yeah, yeah. And there are all these plants and like.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I've lost track of what people are doing with cafes anymore. Like, I
think. Yeah, there are too many. Anyways, you always know the good Instagrammable cafes. As far as I remember.
I want a list, please, when I come to Seoul, then I
can. Absolutely.
We can make a coffee shop crawl.
I exclusively go to the ones with good cake and seating. Mm. That is
very, very wise. Cool. And plugs, or probably, and good Wi-Fi.
Yeah. My God. Like, plugs, so underrated. Like,
I know. Like, in Oxford, is terrible. There's, like, barely any good study cafe. I mean, which is crazy because, obviously, the city's full of students. So we've always kind of imagined the perfect study cafe and what it would have to be like. And it was always, like, plugs, good Wi-Fi, very cozy seating, maybe some hammocks, and unlimited time that you can stay there without actually having to spend much money. But then we thought, no wonder this cafe doesn't exist, because you can't make any money.
Even if they just bring like the sofas back, man, like why did sofas get uncool?
I mean if we look at the 90s, like Friends and stuff, they're on sofas all day. Like, you know,
our city has a lot of sofa cafes. You should all visit us.
Tubing.
Yeah. This is what we talk about. This is what you guys were saying when you say things go really, really left. Really far, far off from the point.
Yes. Okay, well, we should go back to Heaven's Garden.
But I think it was very important to talk about, like,
the cafe owner. I mean, he is a central figure.
He's a cafe owner, yeah.
Oh, there we go.